If we can take our places, we're going to start the meeting in about 1 minute.
Chairwoman.
But you're finny,
Good.
Like at least 10 minutes, not even that.
Yeah. So do we need a, we don't need a resolution on that. We already have, It's targeted funds, right? Targeted just for the So, all right. Okay. Get it out there. Okay. Yeah.
I'm gonna bang that gavel.
Yeah. Are they good? I'll call the meeting to order. Can we take a roll call?
Trustee Scott?
Here.
Trustee Hill?
Here.
Trustee Rozier?
Here.
Trustee Samuels?
Here.
Trustee Kerr?
Here.
Trustee Tolliver?
He's here. Here. A verification that there was notice of the day's meeting?
Yes, they were posted, Chairman.
Is there a motion with regard to the previous minutes?
I move that we approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Here.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Trustee Tolliver?
Yes.
So we're now moving to the business portion of our meeting. Mr. Meeks?
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning, trustees. With me today is Ted Lannon, our controller. And before we begin the finance and administration report, I wanted to make an announcement that I received a phone call from the Office of Management and Budget. And I was told that the $15.5 million that's owed to us from the state for the Douglas Hall renovation has been released by the state. Now, as you know, we've talked here many times about how important it was to have those dollars to release to ensure the accreditation of our pharmacy program. So we're really excited about the news. And and so now the only thing that we need to do is, I need to do when I get back, is working with our facilities people to reach out to CDB to find out how those funds are going to be dispersed and what the particulars are. But that was welcome news that we received just this morning.
It's wonderful news for the university.
Yes. On that note, I'm going to ask that Ted Lannon review the financials, the preliminary financial statements. You should have a copy of them in your package.
Good morning, trustees. Again, my name is Ted Lannon, the controller. I'd like to start with a balance sheet in your... Actually, I do have a handout that... let me... Oh, The purpose of the handout is to provide some comments on the variances in the financials. So I'll wait a moment till everybody has a copy of the handout.
Thank you.
I'm limiting the comments on the balance sheet to focus a little more on the statement of revenues and expenses. So the balance sheet should appear first in your handout and on this, in your package and also on this handout that you just received. The cash, we have a $2.3 million increase in cash, which is primarily related to the in local income due to the increased tuition rates. The other item I would comment on here is the state receivables at March. These again are as of March 31st. So as of March 31st, we had an increase of almost $10 million in state receivables. I understand that we're doing fairly well because of the monitoring that Mr. Meeks is doing on an ongoing basis. By that I mean that we haven't been in a dire situation. We've talked about this quite a bit in these meetings, and the good news is that so far we seem to be doing fairly well on a cash basis. We did not load all of the budgets, however, so part of it is that we have not loaded all of the budgets for FY11 in order to more carefully monitor the situation with the cash. With that, let me move on to the statement of revenues, which should be the next page and the next page in your handout. So with regard to appropriations, there's a $1.3 million increase in FY11 versus FY10. And that really is a factor of that we've been more timely submitting the vouchers to the state comptroller's office. We did experience a staff shortfall last year at this time, and so the vouchers were not submitted as promptly as they're being submitted this year. Student tuition and fees, $4.3 million increase. And again, that's primarily due to the higher enrollment and the tuition increase. In the grants and contracts area, primarily the increase is in the federal, in the Pell Awards, plus the textbook and learning materials grant, that's the Ghana grant. There's quite large dollars related to that for provision of the textbooks. So that there's a $5.4 million increase in that particular program alone. I would just go down now to the expenditures, and I just wanted to focus on two areas here. The student services, which is about the middle of the expenditure section. There's a big increase in Pell in FY11. That's something we've been talking about previously. But also, the Pell is listed under scholarships in FY10, and it's listed under student services, or a big chunk of it is listed under student services in FY11. Then to go to the scholarships, which is next to the last expenditure item, again, the same principle here that the Pell has increased in FY11. But in FY11, it's in the scholarships versus in the student services. The opposite. It's in the student services in FY11 versus in the scholarships in FY10. So overall, primarily, the increase of $4.2 million in excess of revenues over expenditures, it's primarily due to the grants revenue and to the higher tuition revenues. Are there any questions on any? Yes.
Did not the government decrease the Pell Grant in the current proposed budget?
Yes. Yeah, for next year.
That's my question. That's leading to my question.
Right.
How will you, we celebrate this increase, what will the impact in fact be next year?
Yeah, I can answer that. Currently, we're doing an analysis, and this is sort of a segue into a later conversation that I wanted to have with the board, is that there are actually two proposals that are on the table right now. There's a Senate bill and there's a House bill. The Senate bill is calling for over a 3% rescission, and that's for FY12.
Right.
And the House bill is calling for 1% rescission, roughly, and that's all for FY12. What we've done, and I'll be presenting in more detail at the June board meeting, the impact of that on the university, including the possibility of the rescission or cutting back on the Pell Grant as well. And so all of that will be reflected in the numbers that we're drafting up currently right now.
Okay.
And Trustee Tolliver?
Yes.
In answer to your, another answer to your question about Pell, there's year-round Pell. Last summer was the first summer we had year-round Pell. Our summer school enrollment went from something like 520 to 1,200 last summer. That's almost a 100% jump in summer school enrollment because we had year-round Pell. This summer will be the last summer we have it because the cuts that you are referring to, one of the first things that they're knocking out is year-round Pell. So it's going to have an impact on our students. Part of the reason why we have a good graduation rate increase, because our students were able to go to summer school last summer with year-round Pell. Now, the other portion of your question is they have not had a final agreement on it yet, but they're looking at cutting Pell about $900 overall, and that will have a devastating effect on students throughout our country.
Any other questions concerning the financial statements, the preliminary financial statements? If not, I'll ask Ted to
depart.
Yes, to depart.
At some point before, Mr. Meeks, maybe at the next board meeting, can you give us a presentation on how we're tracking against our budget in terms of our you know, income expenditures? And because Mr. Lanham just mentioned that we haven't loaded all the budget, that means that we're not all spending all the money that we budgeted.
That's
that
true.
We would spend.
That's true.
So we need to at least have a sense of where we're lagging, what's not being paid or what's not being spent.
What I can do is I can show you budgeted to actual.
Right.
Budget
right.
to actual.
Right.
Revenue and expenditures.
Okay.
At the June board meeting.
That's fine.
I'll have that presentation. It'll be pretty high level.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. But I can have that, sir.
Thank you.
Ted also mentioned something in it's a good segue to talk a little bit about our cash position. As Ted had indicated in his report, our cash position is not as dire as it had been previously. I've asked our chief accountant, Chad, to join us. So if you allow me. You guys are familiar with this form? What I'd like to do, and again, it just shows every 2 weeks out. This is very similar to what we provided to the Office of Management and Budget and also the Governor's Office when we went down and was indicating that we were indicating that you guys still owe us over $20 million. We need it in order to meet our expenditures and meet our payroll. And so we provided this to them, and what they've done is that they've been funding us according to our projections here, so that's a good thing. We've received about $3 million earlier this week, and they've been continuing to
to reimburse us based on, if you can go up on our projected collections. Based on the projections that we have here, like in line 30, so we're anticipating that they'll still continue to fund us the way our schedule shows here. What I'd like to do is, not go into too much detail, but go to the bottom line where we go on our projections and we'll see where we start to get into trouble or where our cash begins to take a dip. Line 49 here is this is the balance without the state reimbursement. That bottom line there. Okay? We're expecting the state to continue to fund us the way that they have. And if they continue to fund us the way that they have, we see here that if they continue to fund us, we'll be about $8 million at the end of July. If they don't, and they begin to lag behind, or we don't receive the reimbursements, we're looking at about a $2.5 million deficit by the end of July. That's the end of the summer, and so what we know then is that our summer tuition and fees will start kicking in sometime in August, which will bring our cash position back up. But we've been monitoring this very closely, working very closely with the Office of Management and Budget and the Governor's Office to ensure that we still begin to receive the reimbursements on a continuous basis. And I don't have any reason to doubt that they will not continue to fund us the way they've been funding us.
So the last meeting, Glenn, that date that I remember was May 15th. Obviously, we've been funded. So essentially, the date's moved to July 31st if they don't continue to fund us.
Exactly.
So it's just being pushed out, but you don't have any reason to believe they won't do that.
That is true. And then we'll be okay until, once we start receiving the tuition and the tuition revenue dollars in August and in September, we'll be okay until they stop funding us again. But we don't have any reason to doubt that the state will continue to fund us the way that they have been so far.
That's good.
So that's
good news.
Thank you. So that's our cash position. And as I mentioned before, at the next board meeting in June, I'll have a number of action items to present. Tuition waiver, proposed fee increases, and we'll also talk about the FY 2013 budget request and also the operating budget that we plan on loading for 2012. That'll all be presented at the next board meeting. So, and plus I'll be able to show you then the budget to actual that Trustee Z. Scott has asked for in high-level summary form. If there's no other questions concerning the cash, I'd like to move into the action items that we have. The very first action item, and what I'd like to do is I'd like to read it. Whereas Chicago State University's current food vendor service contract is set to expire June 30th, 2011. Whereas Chicago State University's food vendor service contract for the past two fiscal years has generated revenues totaling approximately $130,000. That's roughly about $65,000 a year. Whereas Chicago State University has sought a vendor to provide food vendor services throughout the entire campus, a vendor has been selected by the bid review committee and the procurement policy board. Upon approval by the Board of Trustees, a three-year agreement with a two-year option to renew for a total of 5 years will be entered into with the selected vendor. Whereas all applicable purchasing procedures of the state of Illinois have been followed. Therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Trustees approves the food vendor service contract with the selected vendor for a three-year agreement with a two-year option to renew for a total of 5 years. Let me just, a little background. We put out a bid for the food vendor contract, and there were eight people that participated, eight vendors, and the result of which is that we're ready to make a selection. We had a pre-bid conference, eight vendors participated in that. And as a result of going through all of the procedures under the procurement policy rules for the state of Illinois, we're ready to make a selection. And I'm asking for approval to move forward with this.
So were you able to get some of the concessions that you wanted?
Yes, we did.
some of them, you know, when we put this out, there was a committee that was formed. There was a number of things that, problems that we had, or issues that we had, or concerns that we had with the current vendor. Quality of food, service, extending hours, having an athletic table, you know, being a little bit more sensitive to our athletes and their need for nutrition, more nutritional foods, more variety, all of those things. And we also were looking at, in terms of the profit margin, mm-hmm. That these vendors would be getting from us as a result of that. So we're trying to keep all of that in check. Now, we're ready to enter into a contractual arrangement with the selected vendor, and we want to highlight those items that I just, our concerns, to make sure our concerns are addressed, because they're in the bid proposal that we had put out, but they're also, we want to have them in the contract and also a review. Above all other things, one of the things that we really want to do with the food service vendor is that the previous vendor that we had, there was an exclusivity clause that was in there that forbidded, that gave them first right of refusal for all catering services on campus, with the exception of two locations. And so their prices got to be costly. Thank you. And as a result, in the new proposal that we put out, we took that out, that exclusivity out. So that would allow departments then to go out to other caterers and to compete. So that would force then our current vendor to be more competitive with their prices.
As an information item to the board, let me say that the profit margin is something that I'm greatly concerned with, and I've asked Glenn Meeks and the team that when we enter this next stage, that we hold a very hard line. You know, I have no problem with the company making a profit, but it is my understanding and what I've been able to see that their profit margin was excessive. So we're going to have some real hard-nosed negotiation with them. And I've talked with the manager over there, and I let them know that whatever profit margin they had last time, if they go with this, if we go with them, they will not experience that profit margin this time. And we do not want the quality of food to go down as a result of it.
Who is the selected vendor?
Yeah, well, we're not.
Yeah, we're not ready to disclose that just yet.
Can we know who the eight were, or, you know?
The list of the eight that participated, yes. I don't have the entire listing, but the information is public information, is public record, and is out on the policy procurement board, all okay. of those people that selected. So it's public record who actually were participating, or the information is out on the policy procurement board website.
Okay, I don't know if this is out of place or not, but I'm going to try to be as tactful as possible. When I vote, I would like to know whether or not I am voting for Thompson Hospitality. Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Meeks?
Yes, ma'am.
I know we have spoken, and you just mentioned the concept of nutrition, and I'm just, I don't think this can be in a contract, but did you discuss with this potential vendor the promotion of healthier foods, the public, the display of signage on calories and nutrients in the food so that students can be helped to make better choices of food?
Yeah, we did in the RFP request high quality of food. That was one of the components that we judged the vendors on was quality of food. And when we negotiate the contract, we can specify in more details what we want to see,
right?
Well, in terms of the nutritional count, calorie count, etc.
Well, that would be really good. I mean, we do serve children too, besides, you know, older,
yes,
young adults, but also just having materials, you know, brochure, a flyer, up to date, seasonal, all the kinds of things that we need in this environment where obesity is such an issue, and certainly all sorts of health issues related to food and diet. So,
yes.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
One other item. a cultural sensitivity, so that you have a multicultural, you're seeking a multicultural student body.
Yes.
And therefore, there should be some input from those diverse constituencies about cuisine, so that everybody walks in there feeling this is something that takes me into consideration.
That was also part of the RFP request that we sent out as one of the requirements, being, you know, the cultural sensitivity and having a variety and being able to address the different cultural needs of individuals, as well as the nutritional aspect.
Can I ask a question of clarification? The resolution talks about the past two fiscal years, the contract has generated revenues of $130,000. Is that revenues to the university? Is that profit to the university? Is that revenues to the food service vendor? I'm not.
That's revenue to the, that's revenue to the university.
So if you set a target, since the president has indicated he thought they had excessive profit margin, have you set a revenue target in your negotiations for the university?
That will be part of the contract negotiations.
I mean,
we have an idea of where we are.
Do you have a target in mind?
Yes.
And the question is, do you have a target in mind?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. For the university, we do.
And so do you, I guess part of this is, as you move forward, do you expect a significant change, either positively or negatively, on the university's financial situation based on the revenues that we've been experiencing?
As a result, yes, we're expecting a positive change.
Okay.
As a result of our negotiations.
One of the changes to the contract, does it have to do with students now being able to eat during the Thanksgiving break or the spring break when they're staying, whereas before they weren't able to?
Yeah. You know, that came up as an issue because because that was an issue. And as you know, the current situation with the students is that there is a rate that is charged all students. And there's really, we can make concessions for those students, but it would mean then that would have the potential of driving up the cost for the vendor, because at no given time do we realize how many students will be available to participate in that, you know, during that period of time. If you've got, you know, 300 students in the dorm, let's say, and only 50, 25 remain during the spring break, then the cost to staff, provide food, would drive up the cost on a per student basis, not just for the students that are staying there, because of the way that they have their price, the way the price structure is structured. So we can definitely address that issue, and there may be another way of addressing that issue other than making it part of this RFP.
I hate to think that there were 25 hungry students here, but I think it makes sense to start to look at creatively. You know,
yes.
this contract may not be the solution, but it seems like it, you know, certainly impacts some students who really don't have a lot of choices other than that, and might be worth.
That's true, and I've
to address.
I've got some ideas on how to do that, and I would like to, and I'll be addressing that with the director of student housing on how we can accommodate those students that intend to stay here.
Okay. I would imagine
there is an alternative.
So I would think you'd have some alternatives that would probably be less of the cost of negotiating the contract.
Yes, right. Yes, there
right.
would be.
Right.
Because
right.
there are other vendors that would love to do business with our institution and to get in here, and we can work out an arrangement with one of those food vendors to provide.
Also, students are whimsical during break. You know, they don't have a standard schedule.
They don't.
So you'd really have to poll them and see what their needs are, and we couldn't determine that here.
No, that is true. That is true.
Yeah. Glenn, I just wanted to be clear really quick before we vote. So we're actually not voting on the contract. It hasn't been negotiated yet. We're basically giving you the authority to negotiate the contract, correct?
Exactly.
That's not what this, that's why I was troubled on, to ask to vote on a contract where there's no substance. So the wording doesn't say that.
Right.
That you're authorized, we're authorizing you to negotiate a contract.
Right. This is what I'm trying to
say. It says you're authorizing us to approve the contract. And I would be unready to approve something I haven't seen.
Well, it's actually not the contract. What I'm asking for is approval to move forward with the selected vendor, and then we will begin to do the negotiation, the contract negotiations with that vendor, with our own legal counsel.
I still feel a little more comfortable if we could change the wording on that.
Right.
Because it states that we're approving the contract with that vendor. That's not exactly true. So I imagine it's just some legal verbiage, but.
What you want is approval to enter in negotiations with a particular vendor.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
The Board of Trustees.
Because those negotiations can fall apart.
That's true. That is so true.
Right.
That is true.
So with that modification in the resolution.
I'll modify the resolution. You have the modified resolution this afternoon.
Full board meeting.
For the full board meeting.
Okay.
And I'll bring revised.
With that,
Change, I would move that we approve the resolution.
Second.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
No.
Trustee Tolliver?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
Okay, for right now, that's all I have, and I'll ask health insurance fee increase, Gail Cannon.
Good morning. Okay, I'm Gail Cannon, the coordinator of the Student Health Insurance Program, and this is Dr. Lisa Young, director over the Wellness Center. This morning we've come to you to request an increase in the student health insurance premium, which is currently at $462.50 per semester, which is $925 over the year. That includes a $10 administrative fee, which is $20 over the year. The increase that we're asking for now is a 7% increase. And that would bring the monthly, rather the annual insurance premium to $905 without the administrative fee. And we're also requesting a $5 increase on the administrative fee, which would be $30 over the year. So that would bring a student to $998 over the year for insurance, and that would be a basic plan that does not include maternity.
I thought the plan did include maternity.
There would be the second plan that does include maternity,
mm-hmm.
and those rates would be a little higher.
Okay, so but the basic plan is not.
Right.
And in terms of the, I've looked at the resolution, and the resolution states that even though we're midterm in our health insurance contract, that the increase is permitted under the contract. And I'm assuming the vendor has come to you and asked for the increase.
That's correct.
So again, I just want to clarify. Anytime we pass along the cost of student, this is. Yes. Because the cost of the service has increased. Right, this is not a situation where we're trying to increase revenues at the university.
No.
Is that correct?
Well, in the administrative fee, we are, when we're asking for the additional $5.
Sure.
But in the premium.
For the basic coverage.
For the basic coverage.
Got it. Thank you.
Excuse me. How much higher would the increase be if maternity was included?
If maternity is included, that would be $36 per semester and $72 for the year. It currently is at, pardon? It's currently at $512 or without the fee, $522 per semester with the fee. And so looking at the, looking at the, per semester amount, it would go up to $548 with the fee.
Okay. opposed to without?
Opposed to without the fee. I'm sorry. She's talking about with the maternity. Okay, it's okay. All right, let me say this over again. I'm sorry. I only have the annual fee.
Just divide the annual fee by two.
I'm sorry, sir.
Just divide the annual fee by two.
What is it?
Right, the annual fee.
With.
It is okay. Per semester, it would be $548, and that's a $36 difference. That's without the fee. So if you added $15 on to the $548, it would be $563.
The reason I ask is because it doesn't seem like that much of a difference when you take into consideration the fact that the majority of our student body, if they don't already have children, usually end up having children before they graduate.
I would agree.
So why are we considering the one that doesn't include maternity?
I could speak to that. In the previous carrier that they had, the premiums were increased like they are now, are they requesting, and they found that there was, due to the maternity costs, increase in students having pregnancies, which offset the plan for the whole population of the students. So this time, when they negotiated on the previous plan, there was no coverage at all for maternity. So when we went to this time and got the new carrier, we asked that they have an option, because our students, we have so many female students that we thought that they should at least have the option to pick up the maternity coverage if they wanted to. And since we didn't want all the students to be upset by the fact that we were adding this cost, we thought we would just kind of phase it in. So our intent was at the next time to ask that it be covered for all students, because it was previously no coverage for any of them.
So my question is, are they able to change their coverage at any given moment? Because most pregnancies are not planned. So, you know, at any moment, a student has the option to switch from one to the other.
It's a semester. Right.
So semester, they can, depending on the situation, they would be able to change and know
what
they have.
There would be no problem, especially if the students say, as long as there's been no break in coverage for them,
mm-hmm.
then they could be covered.
Okay, and all students will be notified that while they're registering, they have that option.
Yes, that's on the website. It gives them the two plans with the differences.
Okay.
And when I speak of the website is where a student has to go online to either waive the insurance if they have their own insurance, or enroll into the basic plan without maternity or the maternity plan.
And it's still through United Healthcare?
It is United Healthcare, yes.
Okay.
Are there any other questions from trustees?
There's no questions.
Is there a motion with regard to the resolution that's been presented?
Yeah.
I think she wanted me to comment on the pre-existing. There is a pre-existing clause for the basic plan, and that's only if the student had no coverage. This pre-existing clause is 6 months. So if they provided that they had coverage that was uninterrupted, then it would be considered that they'd be covered. They had insurance with a previous carrier and no interruption, then they should be fine.
But if they didn't and they come in?
Then that would be, I'm not sure under the maternity clause, but I believe that they can go right into it.
Yes.
With the maternity.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So
but the other one, there is a pre-existing.
I move that we approve the resolution.
I second.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Trustee Tolliver?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
morning.
Good morning, trustees. My name is Monique Horton. I'm the Assistant Director of Physical Facilities. I have with me Tracy Nesbitt-Stokes, Project Manager for the Robinson Center. We are here to present today three resolutions, the first of which would be the Westside Campus. This is for the board's approval to, for the university to receive and administer the CDB grant funds for the project. The project would, the grant would be a total of $4 million. The first initial disbursement would be $1 million. It would be for contracts including consulting services, the purchase of real estate, as well as market studies and feasibility studies.
I have some questions. I've been speaking to people on the west side. It's just recently actually presented before a group of the South Austin Coalition Community Council. And there's a lot of interest in this. There's a lot of desire to have a west side campus. But they also have a lot of interest in helping to decide where it's going to be. So my question is, who decides on the site selection? Has it already been decided? Will it be decided, and can we establish a process to involve the community on the west side?
So yes, I can speak to that. Part of the funding, actually, we will have to develop a committee that would research the site selection. So there are dollars actually put in the grant for site selection. With the assistance of the president to choose not just that committee, but several other committees that will be needed for the project.
Okay, and this would happen as soon as when?
The grant term is a 2-year term. So upon signing, the term actually begins. So if the actual agreement was signed this year, 2011, there would be 2 years to complete the grant term in lieu of asking for an extension.
All right, well, thank you very much. I would like to be kept informed.
But you did say a consultant would be hired to guide the process, right?
That is correct.
So the point I want to make is there are probably innumerable stakeholders on the west side who feel they should have a voice, but this should be guided by objective analysis of where an institution of higher learning can best prosper, and not a highly politicized decision based on who screams the loudest.
Duly noted and agreed.
I agree with that.
I'm not gonna add anything to that because I can't say it better. This is Chicago State campus. This is gonna be a Chicago State decision. So we'll be real careful about the political implications. So thanks, Trustee Tolliver.
Excuse me, I just ask that you, whoever the consultants are, that you make sure they keep in mind the demographical needs of our campus university, even though it'll be located on the west side. You know, when they're doing their research as far as the types of students who attend our school and stuff, to please keep those in mind. I know a lot of times surveys go into play and different types of studies, but ours is a special type of university. We cater to certain types of students, and of course, location is everything, so please make sure they don't use some generic form of branding to decide what will be best for our university.
I remember discussing this issue with the former president of Northeastern Illinois University, who was a colleague of mine, and she pointed out they had 3 satellite campuses. Mm-hmm. So this is not unique, what we're trying to do.
Is there a motion with regard to the resolution?
Do you want to say something, Mr. President?
Just to build on what Trustee Tolliver stated, and Northeastern University used to be a satellite campus to Chicago State University. It came from Chicago State University. That has been lost in the history.
Is there a motion with regard to the resolution?
I move adoption.
Second.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Trustee Tolliver?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
The second of the three, we're seeking the board's approval for the paving and parking lot roadway project. Currently,
As you may have noticed, some of our roadways are in disrepair, some of our parking lots are in disrepair, so we would like a project to begin to fix that situation. The project would be budgeted at about $350,000 a year, and the actual funds would come from the parking revenues that are already generated. The project would take about 5 years, so it would be a phased project, and we are looking to begin the engineering, which we believe would exceed $100,000. So we seek the board's approval to begin to contract with professional services, including engineering, and then to proceed with construction services to begin the paving.
Is it just merely repaving or resurfacing? Which one?
So at the 95th Street entrance at St. Lawrence, we understand that because of the load, we would need to actually replace all of the asphalt with a concrete, a more durable surface. So that would actually be taken up in entirety and replaced with concrete. For some of the parking lots, we would do a resurfacing, which would be at least a 2 to 3 inch resurfacing of the parking lots.
For the new construction, having gone through this wearing my real estate hat, are you subject to any of the city codes that require use of green technology? For example, we had to use pavers, which resulted in building a new parking lot, layers of rocks and all kinds of things that absorb the water, and pavers as opposed to asphalt. So since you will be engaging in some places in new construction, are there any new codes that will dictate what you can replace that with?
Okay. Although we as a state institution, we are not subject to city codes, we do take them under very careful advisement. So some of the city codes, according to some of the green standard, we would like to adopt. Some of the other ones, we do have to look at the financial constraints as well as the existing conditions.
I'm not an advocate because it takes a lot more maintenance and the durability, the lifespan is less. But I just wanted to know, I fought it, but I had no choice. If you are subject to any of those codes.
Yeah. So no, as a
state, I wasn't saying it as an advocate.
Gotcha. As a state institution, we're not subject to the city codes.
Thank you. Is there a motion with regard to the resolution on the parking lot?
Can I ask just where these, where the funds, are these budgeted funds?
Yes, they are. So they are budgeted funds upon approval that would go actually towards the paving project. Currently, we have, we've looked with Glenn Meeks with the current parking revenues, and it can, with the current parking revenues, can withstand the project.
Move approval.
Second.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Trustee Tolliver?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
The third and final resolution will be presented by Ms. Tracy Nesbitt Stokes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This resolution is for requesting the board to approve of the architect that has been selected by the committee for the Robinson University Center. The scope of work entails addressing the building envelope. The committee met. We shortlisted the firms, and the firm, the number one ranked firm is InSpec. This project is under the auspices of the Capital Development Board. Upon approval of this board, the recommendation will be sent forward to the CDB.
Got any questions about the resolution? Is there a motion with regard to the resolution?
So moved.
Second.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Trustee Tolliver?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes. Thank you, trustees. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, My name's Ken Cloud. I'm the Chief Internal Auditor.
And I'm Deborah Muhammad, the Assistant Chief Internal Auditor.
We're going to do things just a little bit different. I'm going to start off with in regards to the internal audit synopsis, and then I'll invite Mr. Glenn Meeks up to do a discussion in regards to the external audit. First of all, I'd like to go through the fact that we are now beginning our fiscal year 2012 internal audit plan preparation. One thing that I will be sending out relatively briefly, most likely next week, is a risk assessment tool for the couple of the board members as well as some administrators to complete and help us determine some of the areas that we want in the fiscal year 2012 plan. I've also identified some areas of concern through other methods, but now it's time to solicit some information from other individuals as well. So I'll be doing that relatively soon. I'd like to talk about the 2011 plan in regards to what's happening there. We had a revisement of the plan in March of 2011 based on, in light of some of the new information that came about. So we revised some of the initiatives. We input some new audits, which we are currently in progress of doing. We've also taken some off the plate for this year and going to move those into next year as part of our development of that plan as well. So I just wanted to let you know and give you a quick synopsis of some of those that we included. We included student accounts receivable. We included property accounting, purchasing card transactions, Office of Grants and Research reconciliations, and some P-card transactions testing specifically. Right now, we are about 90% complete in the Office of Grants and Research, student AR, accounts payable, voucher testing, as well as the P-card transaction testing. The field work has been completed, and we're in the process of finalizing the draft audit report to provide for management to get their responses from. Other areas are in process in various stages at this point in time. The next thing I'd like to talk about is our quality assessment review that's coming up here in June. In fact, I am going out next week to do a quality assurance review at Illinois State University. It's a reciprocity type of agreement. So I'll be out there for 3 days next week performing their QAR, and then I've got two people, one from SIU and another one from Western Illinois, I believe it is, that's going to be coming out and doing ours on June 12th. And Deborah goes out to Eastern Illinois in July to do theirs. So
this is a peer review process?
What's that?
This is a peer review process?
This is a peer review process. It's something that is required by the state of Illinois. It's part of the State Internal Audit Advisory Board. It is something that has to be done every 5 years, and this is our fifth year. So right now I'm in the preparation of getting all that documentation together, putting together a questionnaire that I have to answer. I have to prepare matrices and other types of information to provide to them for this review. Then they will come on site for a couple of days and actually review everything and go through my files, go through the internal audit policies, procedures, all the methods that we've been implementing in the past 10 months. And then they'll provide us a report. I won't have that right away, but I'll have an idea of what that would encompass. But the final report I probably will not have until probably around September, and that will come directly from the State Internal Audit Advisory Board. The next thing that we are in the process of working on right now, and we are very close to fruition. Well, also in regards to that, I wrote some areas of concern that I think we have from the State Internal Audit Advisory Board when they do this. I don't want to go into a lot of detail on this, but one of them I will highlight is that there was no reports that were done last year from the previous internal auditor. That's a bad thing. You really shouldn't do that. You're supposed to have reports for all audits that were done. Okay. And
so you're saying that prior auditor didn't do any audit reports?
That's correct. So we could be exposed there. So that would be the one major thing that of my concern at this point was from the previous auditor. That does not happen with us. We prepare audit reports after every audit and issue that a draft report to management, as well as review that report with them, and we get responses and we send out a final on every audit. We do not wait. The other thing I wanted to talk about here is that we are almost complete with our analysis of the internal audit software. I anticipate that to be complete next week, and we will, at that point in time, prepare the necessary documents to get that fulfilled and in place as soon as possible.
I understand you're working with Ms. Cole to come up with a solution that would protect the privacy concerns.
That is correct. We have developed some pretty stringent policies in internal audit that will address all of those specific personal identification attributes, as well as HIPAA and any other type of information that is needed that we should not be putting out somewhere else other than the confines of the internal audit department.
Okay.
I'm not going to go through the internal audit infrastructure because that's still ongoing. There's more things that we're doing, more initiatives. The software being one of them is going to take up some of these as well and prepare us for the future in regards to that. But what I would like to do next is talk a little bit about the compliance area, and I would like to invite Ms. Carla Davis to come up real quickly and just give you a quick synopsis of our compliance efforts over the last 2 months. She has been working directly with the external auditors the last couple of weeks, as well as doing some compliance. So, Carla.
Good morning, Board. The last time we met, well, was about approximately 2 months ago. I've been on board working with compliance. My job is kind of bifurcated. I'm doing partially working with the external auditors, and I'm also trying to put together a compliance program. So most of my time has been taken, as of now, preparing for the external audit that began on March 11th, and getting the paperwork and the information and tracking the process to make sure that I can facilitate the process to make sure we get things done timely and efficiently and allowing time for internal review so that we can look at the information before we disseminate it to the auditors. So it's pretty much what I've been doing. We haven't had a lot of time to work on the compliance, the general program, although the president has jump-started that. We sent out emails to the staff and asked them to advise me of all the external reports that are going to be due. And so that's part of putting together a compliance program for the future.
One of the things that I'd like to point out about the compliance program is the software that we're looking at in internal audit also encompasses compliance initiatives and efforts. It's good, it will provide us the ability to not only track all of these efforts, but incorporate and integrate those into our internal audits better when we do them. It also provides us with more reporting and the ability for even individuals at the board to be able to go into this software, obtain reports on our efforts at any time. So that's one of the things that we're trying to make sure with compliance and audit is we're integrating all of this into one platform. Any questions before I turn it over to Mr. Meeks?
I want to make one correction. The internal audit reports were not done for the fiscal year 2010. They were done for 2009, 2008, and 2007, but not for the fiscal year 2010. And we have 2011 because that's what we're working on.
Right. So it was just 1 year.
1 year.
It's just 1 year. Right.
It was the 1 year where the ex-auditor was being transitioned.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.
Are you prepared to give us an update on our audit?
Good morning again. I'd like to give a brief update on the external audit. Before I begin, I just want to reemphasize that the external audit is published, and it is a published document for public record. It can be found on the Office of the Audit General's website. If you go there, you can see all of the details concerning our 2010 audit. And as some of you know, we had 41 material findings of the audit. When the audit process began, it began during the period that the current administration was was just coming in. We were just getting here. As a matter of fact, the audit period had already started when many of us came on board. And as a result, we started addressing some of the immediate needs, some of the low-hanging fruit, some of the more ominous things that we saw and that we discovered. And so as the internal auditors came in to audit us for that period, we already had began to recognize and put in place remedies for many of the things that we came up with. One of the things, too, about the audit that was done, that this was a new audit team that came in, and as a result, they came in with new eyes, with a new zeal, with new vigor. And you usually see that when a new audit team takes over from an old audit team. And what they traditionally do is that they also review some of the work from the previous auditors because they have to rely on that. And as a result of going back and looking at some of the audited, some of the previous audited documents from the previous audit, some things were uncovered that were hence not discovered before. We started putting in place, even during the audit when the auditors were here, a corrective action plan. We have a corrective action plan for each and every one of the 41 findings. And some of the corrective action plans have already been implemented, and they've already been implemented, and we feel as though we are fully in compliance, and there are about maybe somewhere in the neighborhood of 13 to 15 of those. We have other ones that are still being developed, about 18, and about in process of being implemented, about 10. And so we are, you know, we're still working very diligently, trying to continue to address the current audit findings we have, at the same time being proactive in discovering and correcting things that we are still finding that need to be corrected and addressed. Some of the, I want to talk a little bit about the audit broad stroke categories. The 41 findings can be broken down into segments. The first section is about, is the financial audit. Of the financial audit that was done, sometimes referred to technically as the yellow book findings, there are about four of them having to do with the financial statements. To address those, some of the things were uncovered as a result of the external auditors coming in, reviewing some of the work from the previous auditors, and some things that had been carried forward for years were discovered to be an error, or not really accurately reflecting what should be reflected in the financial statements, and so adjustments had to be made in